This is Beyond Zero. I'm Dr. David Meyer. Was there a pattern to your negative self-talk or any that you might have had in the box?
Yeah, man. And I'm sure this is kind of something similar for a lot of players. It's like when I stopped talking to myself in a certain way to where it was almost like a discipline to myself. If I didn't get a hit, you know, I was going to be so mad, instead of realizing how tough the game is, and just for the opportunity to be there, it almost kind of changed the perspective of my mind. And every athlete goes through this. There was an easy point in college when I didn't have to think about anything, and the hits would come and the home runs would come and the line drives would come. And then as you get to a point where things get a little bit tougher, and it's like, why am I not able to do the same things that I was able to do before? So it's kind of like me questioning myself a lot of the times with my negative self-talk. Like, why aren't you able to do this? You've been working so hard at this. You do it in the cage. Why can't you do it right now? You
know, judging yourself.
Right. What's wrong with you right now? And trying to figure out what's wrong with myself, instead of almost talking to myself in the opposite manner. It's like, hey, you're in a great position right now. Do you realize how many other people would love to be in your shoes right now? How many people would love to have this type of quote unquote pressure and opportunity with bases loaded, whatever it may be, learning from quote unquote failures, right? And being able to say, okay, I can take this from today and use it for tomorrow. I get an opportunity to get better.
That was a clip from episode number 93 with current MLB broadcaster and former big leaguer Xavier Scruggs. For the hundreds of elite performers I've worked with over the past 10 and a half years as a sports physical therapist, one of the biggest commonalities I've found among them is this. They all strive for perfection. And I've realized that I'm no different. When I started feverishly hitting the gym at the age of 16, every time I walked into the Y, there was a picture on the wall with a quote that said, "Focusing dead on to sense what lies ahead is the key to a successful life." Success, goals, purpose, and in many ways perfection became central themes in my own life as I grew up. Perhaps you are also striving for perfection. But is this a good or a bad thing? I wanted to explore this idea deeper.
Well, it just so happens I have the APA, the American Psychological Association definition of perfectionism, and their definition of perfectionism is the tendency to demand of others or of oneself an extremely high or even flawless level of performance, above and beyond what is required by the situation. A lot of perfectionism is driven by fear.
Tell me more.
The fear of failure. In some rare cases, the fear of success. The fear of being seen, the fear of being vulnerable, the fear of making mistakes.
I think there's a lot in this tiny little window of what we're talking about that's really important.
Just a few episodes back in number 99, psychologist Dr. Mack and I discussed trauma, which brought us to speaking about its relationship to ADHD. I wondered if perhaps dysfunctional levels of issues focusing and with our attention might have deeper roots. So Dr. Mack recommended that I speak with Dr. Liz Slonina, who specializes in exploring the relationship between perfectionism, ADHD, and is who you just heard from. I've been interested in the whole ADHD-ADD conversation, not because I want to jump on the bandwagon, but because I myself, as I've alluded to in many of my past episodes, have been impacted by it. I was given an IEP, individualized education program, when I was just in second grade, and I was found sitting on the classroom desk. The impairment I was given at the time was speech impaired, but back in the early 90s and the late 80s, ADHD and ADD was not as common of a diagnosis. Eventually, I made them get rid of my diagnosis and persevered, gritting my way through it and growing because of it. Regardless, the reason I bring it up is since I've also realized the effects of certain hallmarks related to ADHD and ADD, which is hyperfocus and perfectionism. But are these things holding me back from achieving more or helping me to do so?
Neurodivergence is this umbrella term of brains are different, brains are very different than the neurotypical way of thinking. And when it comes to neurodivergence, a lot of things fall into this category, such as autism, ADHD. Some people even like to throw in anxiety and trauma, as there are different things happening in the brain that may not be the average Joe or Jane or anyone else in between. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the neurodivergence stems from executive functioning, or the prefrontal cortex in the top of your like frontal lobe, basically your forehead. And executive functioning in your prefrontal cortex is so important because it is the executive of all your other brain functions. And if the executive or CEO of your brain is not organized, distracted, unfocused, all the other things go in different directions. And with executive functioning, that being planning, organizing, time management, prioritization, forming goals that are actually achievable, those are so emphasized in this neurotypical world of productivity, of the workforce, academics, sports, you name it. And for folks that are neurodivergent like myself, that's an extra strain because our executive functioning does not operate the same way as neurotypicals. We do not go, you know, from point A to point B. We go to point A to point Z to point one to point two to point three and then B. And it's non-linear thinking. And for neurotypicals, that annoys
freaks them out. It freaks them out.
They're like, wait, where am I going? They cannot follow our stories that we may give, which we have a bunch of side characters and plot, very side plot lines going on, but we get to it eventually. And that is the challenge of even our language, even our ways of thinking and operating the world are so very different from the neurotypical way. And it's not to say the neurotypical way is the right way or the wrong way, or the neurodivergent way is the right way or the wrong way. It's just different. It can be okay to be different. And the strain here is when neurotypical ways of functioning are placed on neurodivergent brains. We, no matter how much we can, we will not be neurotypical. We may try en masse to get to point A to point B in a storytelling, but it becomes even extra fuel and energy to work our brains in ways that are not natural to us. So this comes in a lot of problems with work performance, academics, getting into, you know, school, graduate school, what have you, those damn standardized tests. Those are not our strengths at all. But we have to, whether it is perform extra hard, overachieve, perfect, overcorrect, in order to survive in a neurotypical way of living. And this is where it comes like full circle to perfectionism. And there's different ways of thinking about perfectionism. That just defining it is having extremely high standards for yourself, others, the world, that are unachievable. And perfectionism is seen a lot in neurodivergence, especially ADHD, because it is a way that we protect and mask ourselves. We, yes, can be forgetful at times. We are not the best at planning in a neurotypical way. But with perfecting, overanalyzing, double, triple checking our work, this is how we cope with our brains working differently. And of course, there's always a balance between, yeah, double checking your work, making sure there's no typos in what you're writing or doing. But it comes to a point where there's a difference between striving for excellence and striving for perfection. You're never going to achieve perfection, no matter how much you try. But it becomes such an overused coping strategy, a protection mechanism to survive in a neurotypical world, that we get in our own ways. This masking property of trying to perform and like a neurotypical to get the job, to get that A in class, to really be the top performer, it can get us somewhere, but then there's a cap of how helpful perfectionism is and how it can lead to just crippling anxiety, destroying the creative flow, the creativity that you may have, of even going to procrastination because it's not right enough. It's not good enough. I can never show the world my podcast or this piece of writing or this artwork because it's not good enough. Mm-hmm. And it's really challenging to unravel perfectionism, to be vulnerable, to be flawed, to make mistakes. And I see a lot of folks, including my clients and including myself, having to unlearn perfectionism, having to unlearn and take off the mask of trying to pretend that you're neurotypical, and really being embracing how you think, how you act differently. And that allows more authenticity, more genuineness, and allows you to really perform even better than trying to act like a neurotypical would.
One thing that comes to my mind about neurodivergence and neurotypical is I'm into spirituality. So I'm across the spectrum of Western science. I kind of like to explore what I'm curious about. And there's something called the laws of chirostasia that my more spiritual mentor has talked about, which is the laws of polarity, right? So the equal and opposite poles, right? Good and bad, good and evil. It's all a part of the same spectrum. And when I think of what we're talking about, I'm thinking of the same thing. So with perfectionism, there's definitely positives. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the positives and the negatives of it, right? Because of any maladaptive behavior, there's good and bad, I'm sure, much more bad many times. Let's talk about the good and bad with perfectionism.
Yeah, and I love this discussion of the duality.
Yeah.
That both can exist at the same time.
See, this is why I interview psychologists, because as a physical therapist, we are not nearly as good with vocabulary. So you, Dr. Mack, we talk about all the Latin stuff, but this makes me sound better. Duality. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
yes,
you.
Duality. And we love to nuance the fuck out of everything. There is no black and white answer. It's always, it depends. So I'm actually struggling with the good of perfectionism, because perfectionism has its roots denying reality. It has its roots in even denying the human experience, which there's no such thing as perfection. We're never going to be enough or perfect enough. And it's kind of striving to something that doesn't even exist. So being a psychologist, words are important. I like to frame it as, okay, perfectionism versus excellence. And excellence being, yeah, achievable. There's a standard that you want to meet that is realistic, doable, that is aligned to your values.
Right.
And versus perfectionism, which is this ridiculously high standard where there's no mistakes. It's flawless. And that's very rare, if not impossible to actually achieve, especially in a sports arena. But going to that question of like, what good could come from excellence or, you know, striving to be your best? And that is coming down to wanting to do a good job, wanting to be at your best, wanting to perform well, to perform optimally, to achieve your wishes and dreams, to have certain standards and dreams to come across eventually. And in the context of like neurodivergence, as I mentioned before, the perfectionism can come out as a coping skill of trying to perform like a neurotypical, making sure there's no mistakes and various typos or ways of thinking and acting. And it's to that point too of, I'm not saying to make a sloppy mess or slack at your job, but noticing that balance and flexibility. There's a point of wanting to achieve a goal of, you know, 10,000 followers or getting a sponsorship or landing that job promotion. And it's very different to say like you want to start an empire or you want to be the most famous, I don't know, podcaster ever. And that's where it tends to go into the unhelpful direction of, is this a helpful behavior or is this unhelpful? Is this getting in your way? Is what you do never good enough? Is what you do, there's always going to be something more to strive for, to want more of? And with the kind of the negative things or the unhelpful things, it can tank your self-worth and self-esteem.
I realized speaking with Dr. Liz and putting this episode together that in many ways, this is a very nonlinear podcast, or to use a bigger word, a neurodivergent podcast. And although I agreed with many things Dr. Liz was saying, while learning about a new topic, neurodivergence versus neurotypical, and the relationship between perfectionism and ADHD, I couldn't help but feel significant resistance building up inside of me. How can I accept that this is unhealthy or the wrong direction for me to strive for, at times, outlandish goals? If I never set a goal to work in Major League Baseball, the guy that barely made the cut in college, how in the world would I have done many of the things I've done as an underdog myself? Then as I did further research into perfectionism, I realized I was not alone. Dr. Catherine Morgan Schaffler wrote The Perfectionist Guide to Losing Control and spoke of exactly this, the adaptive side to perfectionism. So I went down a further rabbit hole of research to learn the background on it, and even how we tend to pride ourselves on perfectionism. See, I'm not disagreeing with the idea that being flawless is not helpful. I'm struggling with the idea that striving for our absolute best, or at least what we believe to be that, sometimes which might not appear very attainable, is not what we should be going after. This led to a pseudo-coaching session for myself. So you're about to eavesdrop onto our session and hear what it was like for me to explore my own sense of perfectionism and striving to go beyond my own zero. After you listen to that, I'm going to share with you the other side to this coin, where my research took me to an article on the adaptive mechanisms behind perfectionism. But first, listen in as I take a seat on the proverbial shrink's couch.
This is a tough conversation for me to
Oh, yeah. Because I'm just curious, what is popping up for you right now?
All right. So this apparently is an episode where I've been vulnerable on podcast episodes, but I don't think I've ever been this much. I'm deflecting. What's popping up is I identify myself, my identity, myself, my sense of self has been in many ways been built around this underdog mentality of my IEP I had, being shorter than a lot of people around me, growing up in a family that didn't have the type of money that the other side of the town had. So I was kind of, you know, I did really well. I mean, I had everything I needed growing up, and I'm very grateful for that. But at the same time, I felt, at least seeing what I saw, that I kind of had a little chip on my shoulder compared to who I went to school with as a middle-class family. And so even just kind of pushing myself from that lens, relationships I've been in terms of, you know, being broken up with and wanting to make the best version of myself. So I guess the biggest thing that comes up is, and I already knew it was going to go here, is I would never recommend somebody to be a perfectionist.
Oh, yeah.
And I acknowledge very much that perfectionism is not a good thing. I don't know where I am yet fully on that, but perfectionism, I don't know if I fully am at peace with my definition of it, but mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing that I'm kind of having come up is my sense of myself is as an underdog and striving for not mediocre, not good, but full potential. So, okay. So to another layer to it is I was a twin. I'm a surviving twin.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm a surviving twin. My twin brother, who was my middle name, Mark, died, I think the last month before I was born. Kind of impacted my mother a lot. I think she, you know, I heard about it at a young age. So I grew up an only child. My father died when I was 21. My mother and I have been working on improving our relationship. And, you know, I love her dearly, and she's done a lot for me. And that's part of it as well. So I think for me, it's potentially the fear. I guess my fear is not living up to full potential. And that's a big thing for me. And maybe I am putting the two in the same bucket that shouldn't be in the bucket.
There we go. Yes, you are right on target. And I really appreciate the depth of your vulnerability right now, David. And even noticing how perfectionism is a sneaky bitch that can claim your identity. And that's the
Sounds
interesting
like a book title.
Maybe that's my future book. But
subtitle at least.
Yeah. And this is the interesting thing with identity is that identity is just an illusion. You are more than your perfectionism. You are more than, you know, your career, your relationships, your podcast, your achievements, your GPA, your net worth. But when we do like place all our emphasis, all our eggs in one basket of our identity, when that sense of identity doesn't go according to plan or we fail in air quotes, oh man, that can be an existential crisis of who am I without my perfectionism? If that perfectionism was not really a coping strategy, who would you be? What would you do? What would you do differently? How would you approach your life?
I think one of the things, well, no, the next thing that comes up is, and this is, so consciousness is the other thing that I've been exploring. And talked to my mentor last Saturday, and he said something that stuck with me. He's like, he said he believes one day they'll be able to put states of consciousness with certain diagnoses like major depression or what have you, and explore that. Whether or not that will happen, that just kind of gave me the reminder that consciousness might not be one. It's not one state. I mean, there's different levels of consciousness. There's different types of consciousness. And I'm not sure I exactly know exactly what being is just yet. And
sure. So
with identity and being and consciousness, I'm not sure I don't have that figured out.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think scientists have really firmly defined what it is and what it isn't. And I think it exists more on a spectrum, much like consciousness to unconsciousness, throwing in hypnosis in there. Yeah, words are important. Definitions are important. But understanding the difference between consciousness versus being versus unconsciousness. I think there's so many different layers, and I would hypothesize that they are different, but interconnected and interrelated.
Yeah. Yeah. I think where I was trying to go was I'm exploring who I am, right? And I think that's part of growth. So I think maybe that's what's coming up now is a bigger piece to the puzzle sometimes can be less of the goal-oriented tasks and behaviors and could be a little bit more of self-exploration.
Yes.
And that has come into different waves in a society of you know, the 60s, currently right now. Self-exploration is definitely probably more acceptable, and perhaps maybe that's part of the conversation. Maybe that can be looked upon as like a really cool thing to go within and get away from the objective. Because in my mind, what I see really is, okay, I want, let's say, the top podcast in the space of personal development, right? And that's this goal that we all know if it was achieved, it really in and of itself, it would be a short-lived dopamine hit. And it would be a big dopamine hit, but what does that even do? What does that actually provide? And yet knowing that very knowing that very well, still, we kind of missed the boat on this idea of self-exploration.
I agree. And circling back to, okay, perfectionism as an identity versus, I think you said something along the lines of performing optimally or being at your best.
Right. Living to your potential, right?
Yes, living to your potential. And I think we can separate those two, because living to your potential, that isn't just one moment in time. It's not, every day is different. Every day, your potential is going to be different. Every day of what you can do on your to-do list versus not. And to have like an ever-going high bar of my optimal performance is, I don't even know, getting 8 hours of sleep and working, you know, 12 hours a day or what have you. That's not sustainable. And really meeting yourself where you're at and being mindful of your limits, being mindful of and compassionate to yourself of what can I realistically do today, and giving yourself full permission that, okay, that's enough. That is enough for today. There's going to be a tomorrow and a tomorrow after that. And that can really release the extra burden, the extra pressure that only you are placing on yourself. And only are you, in a way, shooting yourself in the foot. And I think with this perspective of we all have various identities that we may hold or cling tighter to or looser to, and going to that self-development, I mean, if you just look back to maybe your high school years, I'm sure there's a label of where you would place yourself, whether it's in the jocks or the nerds or something in between. But being where you are now, maybe that label doesn't feel completely you. That's in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you asked that and said that, because I was the one that, no, I don't have that. Was I a jock? Yes. Was I in drama club? Yes. Was I nerdy at times? Yes. I built websites when I was 12 or 13. I think, you know, for me, it is interesting in that sense, because if I watch a video of myself and I watch videos of myself and I hear myself, there's these patterns for sure. But it's been elusive for me to figure that out.
Yeah. And you've evolved over time. And this is the aspect of like, you didn't fit into a nice box. You were doing all these different things. And this is what I encourage my clients to do, is rather than pigeonhole yourself as a perfectionist, an overachiever, a podcaster, what have you, go back to your values, your why, your compass of living your life.
Yeah. Wrapping up, I do want to leave you with this. Here's the conclusion to a paper written titled Positive Conceptions of Perfectionism, Approaches, Evidence, Challenges by, and excuse the pronunciation, Joachim Stober and Kathleen Otto, published in 2006 in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. And in quoting the conclusion of the paper, consequently, it is important to acknowledge that perfectionism does not necessarily represent a negative, dysfunctional, or even pathological characteristic. Instead, perfectionism is a multidimensional phenomenon with many facets, some of which are positive, some of which are negative. And they cite Enns and Cox in 2002. That combined two basic dimensions of perfectionism: perfectionistic strivings and perfectionistic concerns, which again differentiate between healthy and unhealthy perfectionists. This differentiation between healthy and unhealthy perfectionists best corresponds to what Hamacek in 1978 had in mind when almost 30 years ago he suggested that two forms of perfectionism be differentiated, and made first suggestions to describe the differences between normal perfectionists and neurotic perfectionists. Translated to the present conceptions, normal perfectionists are individuals who show high levels of perfectionistic strivings, but are not overly distressed by the issues that are combined in the dimension of perfectionistic concerns, namely, concerns over mistakes, doubts about actions, feelings of discrepancy between actual achievements and high expectations, self-criticism, and the fear of failure to live up to one's own standards and to the high expectations of others. In contrast, neurotic perfectionists show high levels of perfectionistic strivings and are overly distressed by the issues combined in the dimension of perfectionistic concerns. Thus, perfectionistic concerns may be the factor that distinguishes clinical forms of perfectionism from healthy pursuit of excellence. And they cite Shaffron et al. 2002, see also Dunkley et al. 2006. In contrast, perfectionistic strivings in themselves are not only normal, but may be positive. If only perfectionists could focus on doing their best rather than worrying about mistakes, enjoying striving for perfection rather than being afraid of falling short of it, and concentrate on what has been achieved rather than pondering the discrepancy between what has been achieved and what might have been achieved if everything worked out perfectly, in this form, perfectionism would be a perfectly positive disposition. And I end quote. Okay, so at the end of the day, if many of you are beyond zeroers like me, underdogs, striving to persevere and make the best of your life through its challenges and your shortcomings, you're not going to just give up on striving for perfection, as this article calls it perfectionistic strivings. But perhaps you can start naming it to tame it, as Dr. Liz mentions, when you find yourself in what this article calls perfectionistic concerns. In short, trying to be flawless and not doing your best work at all in fear of failure. That part is definitely not helping us, especially with our perfectionistic strivings that might actually be good. Okay, well, in the realistic world, since I can't put a bow on this imperfect episode, I'm going to leave it there and be happy with my work for episode number 102. Actually, you know what? On second thought, let me leave you with my own words after doing this episode. Let's all work on accepting the best version of ourselves today so that we don't get in the way of becoming the best version of ourselves tomorrow. Okay, now I'm really done. If you're enjoying this podcast, please share it on social media, send it to a link to your people, maybe even play it for your pets. Most importantly, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. It means a lot as I build our community of Beyond Zeroers. As always, follow me on social media at Dave M. Meyer. That is DaveMmeyer. Thanks. Take care.